Lake Geneva. Wind chill, minus 2. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We are kicking off today's program by previewing for you the concert that is coming up this Saturday, December 7th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, with the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra. And I'm very happy to be speaking for the next few minutes with Maestro Robert Hasty, who is Artistic Director of the Kenosha Symphony, and Peter Rodriguez, who is a member of the French Horn Section and president of the board, is with us. And we also have with us Michael Gutierrez and Michelle Gutierrez, who are the co-directors of the Kenosha Chamber Choir. And they are going to be collaborating with the symphony on Saturday afternoon's concert. And all four of them are joining me to talk about some of the things that are going to be part of what promises to be a really lovely concert designed with the whole family in mind. So, Robert Hasty, Pete Rodriguez, and Michael and Michelle Gutierrez, we welcome all of you to the morning show.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Let's begin with the president, Mr. Rodriguez. Just tell us a little bit about all that goes on behind the scenes to put a concert like this together, especially when it's a concert that does not feature the symphony alone, but a couple of collaborating ensembles to enhance the fun.
That's right. So we are very pleased to be collaborating with the Kenosha Chamber Choir as well as the Kenosha Academy of Performing Arts. It's fantastic that we're able to do these concerts. And we are blessed to have the support of Snap-on Incorporated, without whose support we wouldn't be able to do this concert. This is our typically most attended concert as well. So of course, as you can imagine, there are more logistics to worry about in terms of making sure that, you know, everything's accounted for. But yeah, we're very excited to be putting on this concert on December 7th.
Maestro Hasty, maybe you could talk for a moment about what I imagine is kind of a fun challenge to put a concert like this together in terms of repertoire. I mean, it's not like your typical concert. Well, let's start with an overture, let's have a concerto, let's finish with a symphony. This is a whole lot more complicated in the sense of lots of smaller pieces that you want to fit together well. Tell us the kind of things you think about in terms of assembling a program like this, and particularly when you want to draw in some collaborating musicians to join the orchestra.
Well, this makes the roles and the activities of a music director more challenging. I would say, Greg, that when I do a traditional concert, that's what you and I went to music school for or conservatory for. That's the easy part, you know, doing the last concert, that successful concert we did with the Fourth Symphony by Tchaikovsky. The music's really challenging, but as a music director, it's very easy to put together. The one class that us music directors don't really get to have is how to put on pops concerts and to collaborate with the community. How to not just be a music director of your orchestra, but to be a music director for the community and the town in which you perform. So for me, that was one of those things where you kind of learn as you go. So this holiday program is not just about the Kenosha Symphony. It's about Kenosha. It's about the community. It's about community involvement. The fact that we have one of the most important companies in Kenosha being involved in this. One of the first things that I did when I took over the orchestra about 12 years ago was to seek out parts of the community that would be amenable to being involved in this. And one of the first organizations that I reached out to after my first year or two was the Kenosha Chamber Choir. I heard that they have been, and I'm sure our guests here will talk maybe a little bit more about the history and how long they have existed. But I've been collaborating with Kenosha Chamber Choir for about 10 years on and off. It's been about 5 years since we collaborated because there was a lot of things, change of directors, there was a pandemic, there was a lot of a variety of issues that prevented us from working together. So I'm very eager to collaborate with them again. And then a few years ago, I discovered that there is this wonderful organization in town in Kenosha called the Kenosha Academy of Performing Arts. And because we traditionally every couple of years we do, which I can talk about the repertoire later if you like, but whenever you do the Nutcracker, the music is great, but we have to understand that it's originally written with the intention of being performed as a ballet. And so I wanted to see what entities in the community exist that would like to collaborate. And that's when I discovered the Kenosha Academy of Performing Arts. And we've been working with them on this concert every year for, I would say, about the past 5 years, with the exception of the COVID years. And they have been one of the highlights of our concerts because they're not just, first of all, we have to understand that they epitomize comprehensive performing arts education because they offer a wide range of classes in dance, music, and theater for students of all ages and skill levels. And their programs are designed to help students develop their talents and reach their full potential. And they have very experienced instructors. They have a team of experienced instructors who provide top-notch training. Most notably, Annette Lonizek, who has been choreographing these ballet dancers from the Academy to perform with the Kenosha Symphony. So the audience who comes on Saturday are going to be thrilled to get to hear their favorite pieces from this wonderful ballet. But not only that, but they're going to get to see some of the most talented dancers in Wisconsin that are here in Kenosha. Once again, Annette Lonizak, very talented. She's the dance instructor as well as the education director who's been teaching in the Chicagoland area for over 20 years. And what's amazing is to see how the professional level of dance that happens. So you're going to see the orchestra up on the stage and you're going to see the dancers come out. We have this very wide area in front of the seating area, big area for dance with the costumes. And I would say it's become an audience favorite. So as a music director, like I said, we get a lot of training in classical music, but we don't get a lot of training in putting on what we call pops concerts. So we do have some traditional music besides that. For instance, Leroy Anderson, A Christmas Festival, which he wrote for the Boston Pops in 1950, has become a huge staple. Once again, I didn't learn how to do score study in my training to Leroy Anderson, but then you realize how important he is to the Pops repertoire. We'll also be doing, of course, his most famous Christmas tune, which is Sleigh Ride. Another example is the Ukrainian Bell Carol, which is, most people just know it as Carol of the Bells, but they don't realize that it's based on a Ukrainian folk chant called Shchedrik, and it was composed by Mykola Leontovich in 1914, and it was actually associated with the New Year and featured a melody that mimicked the sound of bells, which is why we call it Carol of the Bells. And this particular arrangement was done by Peter Wilhowsky in 1936. But I would say, and this ages me a little bit, I remember growing up and watching Sherry Lewis, who was a renowned puppeteer and television host on TV. And I would say she had, I'm trying to remember the name of her puppet. I think
Lamb Chop.
Lamb Chop, thank you. The most famous. It was basically, I think it was a sock with eyes, but she helped really bring this Carol out through her television specials and brought it to a wider audience. So when you become a music director and you are asked to program pops, especially Christmas pops, you kind of learn as you go. And so I've learned what pieces work really well for the pops concerts, and these audiences in Kenosha just keep coming back. They fill the seats, and I'm really excited to be performing this again.
Very good. Looks like a lovely, lovely program. Let's bring in Michael and Michelle, who are the co-directors of the Kenosha Chamber Choir, and maybe one of you can give us a little history of the group and also tell us a little bit about your own collaboration as co-directors. I mean, how is it that you share the responsibilities? Is it a clean split or more of kind of a foggy blend? Do you both kind of pitch in on everything? I mean, tell us a little bit about this partnership as well as the background of the choir itself.
Hi, sure. So I can start a little bit about the background of the choir. So the choir was founded as a community choir in 2007. And throughout the years, the group has grown. We perform a variety of work, contemporary, classical, everything in between. And through the years, we've had a few different directors. We've had one leave to go pursue working in the military. We've had one leave for family things. So all very bad reasons. So I first got involved in 2018 when John Krill, another Carthage grad like myself, was the director, and they needed a pianist for their fall concert. And that is actually possibly the first year, that is the year that they collaborated with the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra. So me being this pianist, you know, subbing in, I got to witness a collaboration with the KSO for the first time, and it was awesome. So after John Krill stepped away, they actually were looking for an interim director, and they asked me, so I stepped in and was directing from the piano for a year. It was so much fun. I absolutely fell in love with the group. Something I love about the KCC is there is such a strong sense of community and warmth and humor and talent, and it really is equally about the music making and the community building within the group and with the surrounding community. And that's something I love about the choir. So when they asked after COVID, I think every choir, you know, K-12 community choir, it was hard getting through COVID, you know, retaining numbers, retaining morale. So it sounds like the group has been rebuilding since then, which is so awesome. And when I was asked to, again, fill in as a pianist this January, of course I said yes, because this group is just such a delight to work with. So that director was Riley Worthen, who stepped down for some family obligations. And this August, we learned we were looking for a director. And I had a phone call with him, and they asked if I would be interested. And I said, you know what? I would be interested. As much as I loved directing this group, I also know a really talented and experienced conductor, who is my husband. So we talked about it, and we thought it would be a really cool, you know, such a core value of the KCC is collaboration. And that's something that Michael and I get to model every rehearsal, every concert, every board meeting. And it's just a lot of fun. So my role would be the assistant director, and Michael's role would be the artistic director. So we share duties. Michael leads most of the rehearsals and, you know, is sort of like the figurehead, like the artistic director of the choir. I will assist with every rehearsal, leading parts of rehearsals, selecting repertoire, conducting a few pieces at concerts, leading sectionals, filling in if we have like a community caroling or some sort of community performance where Michael can't make it. Yeah, all sorts of things. Yeah. Do you want to speak to that?
It really is a beautiful collaboration. So I think one of the unique things about us as an ensemble is that the entire choir gets to witness this authentic collaboration mm-hmm. between us. And with the history that not only Michelle has in the choir, I also joined the choir mm-hmm. this past spring, knowing that they were looking for more bass section singers. So I had joined and was singing under Riley and watching Michelle from the piano and just having a great time singing the repertoire. And so through that entire spring concert season, we were just making ourselves part of that community. And so I think it's a really special moment to have mm-hmm. two people who have been involved in the ensemble kind of lead them mm-hmm. as well. It's great collaboration every week, lots of laughter and smiles and just authentic singing and learning. And it's a great time on Monday nights. And it's like the joy of our week wow. every week.
Yeah. I can tell. So explain what the chamber choir will actually be doing on Saturday afternoon's concert with the Kenosha Symphony.
Yeah, so we have our own concert this fall, and then we have a concert with the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra. So some of what we're going to be singing with the KSO Saturday the 7th are also things that we'll be singing at our concert on December 15th. So like I said, we do love collaborating, whether it's collaborating with the KSO, which was a huge honor to be asked. I had Maestro Hasty as one of my professors for my master's at Northwestern. So when he reached out, I was like, you know, we're collaborating with some high school trumpet players from Tremper High School at our concert as well. But for the KSO's concert, we've been spending a lot of time rehearsing the Home Alone Suite from by John Williams with three pieces. It's a really festive, large-scale work with lots of Debussy and energy and tempo changes, and it's been fun. It's been a good challenge, and the choir's really risen to the challenge and grown from this process, which is exciting. Do you want to take the rest?
Absolutely, yeah. So we'll also be doing some of the caroling that the KSO will be leading from their own instrumental part. So we're excited to do that and join with some audience singing. And then we'll have just a little bit of time on our own just to do a sneak peek of what we're going to offer on December 15th. So we're going to be performing just a few songs, Mary, Did You Know, as recorded by Pentatonix, the Roger Emerson arrangement. Really, really fun tune to kind of set us into the season, as well as a recording done by Fleet Foxes. And then we also are going to be doing a Shalom Chavarim piece as sort of a unity during this holiday season. So really just a snapshot of what is not only sort of traditional and contemporary music to get us through this season of music, but also to inspire our audience to go see more concerts that are happening in the community this winter season.
Really, really lovely. That's Michael and Michelle Gutierrez, who are the co-directors of the Kenosha Chamber Choir that will be collaborating with the Kenosha Symphony this coming Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Maestro Hasty, just give us a quick word about putting a concert like this together, in which there are a bunch of relatively small pieces that get put together. It always seems to me, at least, that that's maybe a little more work, because each of them is their own thing. Each of them has to be kind of rehearsed on their own. And it's the difference between 90 minutes of music and it's three different pieces versus 90 minutes of music and it's 12 different pieces. And it just seems like cumulatively, it's a lot to do. It's a lot to cover in a relatively short amount of time. I should think it's an interesting, exhilarating challenge.
Yes, well, the good news is with professional musicians, you really only need one rehearsal, because when you do a holiday pops concert, it's a lot of repeated material. So, for instance, I don't think, we are guilty as music directors of recycling a lot of in terms of what has worked. So when we put things like, and again, I learned on the job. So for instance, there was one year we ran out of rehearsal time. We didn't even have time to rehearse Sleigh Ride. And the first time we did it was in the concert, but everybody knows it. So it was like, okay, we ran out of time, I think it might have been the year that you sang with us, Greg, where we had it wasn't because of you that we used up all the rehearsal time, by the way. It was simply because I had probably planned a lot of music, and then suddenly the rehearsal's over and they're professional musicians. You need to follow the rules, and okay, well, we'll do Sleigh Ride in the Concert tomorrow. And it went perfectly well. So that's the good news. The other good thing is when I invited Michael and Michelle, I gave them a list of pieces that we could collaborate on, because whenever the choir comes, I want them to showcase themselves. I want them to show the community what exists, not just for so that they could go to their concerts, but I bet the people have come to these concerts who are singers and will say, I didn't know, hey, maybe I could join this choir, and maybe sometime during this radio program, we can talk about how they can do that. So the other thing that's very helpful is programming. The Tchaikovsky is not short. It's over a half hour long. Very, very important piece. So that helps. That takes up the biggest chunk of the night, but it's an audience favorite. It's a selection of 8 pieces from the Nutcracker, and they were chosen by Tchaikovsky himself to be performed as a suite. And it was premiered in 1892, which was several months before the actual full ballet. People don't know that. People think that maybe the ballet was performed first, and then he extracted pieces to form the suite. He actually wrote what you're going to hear first. So just for the audience to know, some of the most iconic pieces are A Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, Waltz of the Flowers, the Trepak, the Russian Dance, Arabian Dance, and they show Tchaikovsky's beautiful orchestration and melodic inventiveness. It's huge. It has a huge cultural impact and has become associated with Christmas time. One of the other important things which I love about it is that it features an instrument that was rarely used, which is the celesta. You're going to hear which we all know from Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. And the use of the celesta by Tchaikovsky holds in his significant historical performance in that he discovered it in Paris in 1891, shortly after it was invented by Augusta Mustel in 1886. And he heard this sound, and so he decided he was going to use it in an orchestral setting for Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. And he kept it a secret because he didn't want any other composers to learn about this instrument, especially Rimsky-Korsakov. He did not want him to know about this. So he kept it a secret. So the first time people heard it in an orchestra was when it was used there. You're going to hear the celesta, but I have a feeling it's going to be President Pete's synthesizer. Right, Pete, are we going to be using your synthesizer again?
Next best thing.
Celeste can be really hard to find.
It's surprisingly heavy, too.
Yes.
It's not a very large thing, but it weighs a lot. And it costs
almost as heavy as an actual celeste.
Wow.
Oh, I was talking about the celeste, too, but you're right.
Well, so then you have... And then the other one, Greg, is that the big chunk of time, you know, almost 12 minutes, are these 3 holiday songs. We kind of talked about it. Each song could be performed alone. And like I said, I'm so glad that Michael and Michelle picked this one, because it takes another big chunk. It means I get to program a few other less pieces on the program. But it's a huge favorite. The 3 main pieces are called Somewhere in My Memory, Star of Bethlehem, and Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. And these songs are arranged for the full orchestra and choir, huge John Williams sound, emotional depth. Somewhere in My Memory in particular, it is very special, evoking a sense of longing and warmth, and it's a huge favorite with the audience. And it's amazing that when you get to be my age, that when certain holiday carols and holiday music comes about during your lifetime, like for instance, I think Mariah Carey, probably people don't remember a time when Mariah Carey's, you know, number one Christmas song existed. There was a time when it did not exist. Hmm. There was a time when Somewhere in My Memory did not exist, and now it's just ubiquitous. Hmm. People just love to hear this music during the holidays. So that kind of is a long way of saying how to program Pops music. The good news is you kind of, the fact that a lot of this music we have done before, so maybe every 3 years, oh, that one worked, I'll bring it back. And luckily we have a nice library of all of these pieces and that the audience loves.
Fantastic. Lots to look forward to. In a second, we'll just have Pete say about how people can come to this concert. Michelle or Michael, I think you should act on Maestro Hasty's idea and say a quick word about people who have thought about maybe they need a group to come sing with. How can somebody be part of the Kenosha Chamber Choir?
Absolutely. Great question. I will start off by saying we are an unauditioned ensemble. So if you have sung in choirs before, but it's been a minute or it's been pre-pandemic even, we'd love to have you join us. Check us out. Anyone is welcome. We are totally inclusive and an exciting group, fun group, community group. We are starting our next concert cycle in January. So Monday nights are our rehearsals from 7 to 9 p.m. at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church at their Guild Hall, right across the street from the church in downtown Kenosha. We would love to have you come check us out then. Anyone's welcome, and bring a friend. You can also check out our website, KenoshaChamberChoir.org. We also have a direct email if that is a better option for folks to get in touch with us directly. Our email is kccadmin@KenoshaChamberChoir.org. And that email gets to our board of directors as well as to Michelle and I. And we would just love to welcome you and get you plugged in January 13th. And we have a really exciting spring concert season planned. It is, as we understand, the 100th anniversary of St. Matthew's Church's organ this year, which is, you know, quite an instrumental historical piece in the community and in the Midwest. So we're hoping to collaborate with some organ selections and choir performances this spring, as well as our concert in May. So a few ways to check us out. We also have a Facebook page, Kenosha Chamber Choir. So many different ways to check us out. But that date to come, first rehearsal, Monday, January 13th.
If I could just say one thing, as a music director, I would not invite a choir to be a part of this of a professional orchestra concert if it wasn't the highest quality. I've always been impressed. So even though it's not auditioned, the people who come in and there's a very high standard of performance. The choir sounds beautiful. We've done some wonderful collaborations over the years, and I've always been impressed with the quality of performance and the quality of singing that happens in the choir. Mm. So even though it's not audition, don't let that fool you. I think people would be surprised when they hear this group that it's a non-audition. There's a very wonderful, beautiful, professional level of musical expectation with this group.
I quite agree. Very good. Michael and Michelle Gutierrez are the co-directors of the Kenosha Chamber Choir that will be collaborating with the Kenosha Symphony this Saturday afternoon. And Pete Rodriguez, what should people do if they are hoping to attend Saturday afternoon's concert?
So prior to the concert, people can buy tickets ahead of time at KenoshaSymphony.org. Tickets are $30 for adults. Children under 18, as well as college students, are free. They can also buy tickets at the door. It's admittedly a little more convenient for the people at the door if you do it ahead of time, but if you don't have time to do it, that's okay. You can buy tickets in cash or credit at the door.
And this will be at Reuther Auditorium, correct?
That's correct.
Very good. Pete Rodriguez is president of the board and a proud member of the French Horn Section, and of course on the podium leading all of the fun, Maestro Robert Hasty. Thank you to all four of you for joining me today on the morning show. Best wishes to all of you for a successful concert this Saturday afternoon.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you for having us.
You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. In part two of today's program, we want to talk about yet another concert that is going to be coming up this weekend on Sunday, December 8th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Sacred Heart Church on the north side of Kenosha. This is the next concert in the by the Spirit of Racine Music Makers. And this is a group that we have talked about before, a group that exists to bring not only music to the community, but music that is going to enhance the concepts of peace and love and a sense of social justice, trying to really make a difference in the community. It's a group that has undergone some dramatic and I dare say wrenching changes over this year with the unexpected death of their beloved founder, George Baumgard. But they are very much still with us and under the leadership of a new artistic director. And we're going to be talking with her today, Margaret Stetka Gurgis, and with Laura Sumner Kuhn, who is president of the board. And it was actually Laura and George who co-created this group back in 2020, if I remember correctly. And so they are both very much involved in the putting together of what promises to be a lovely concert this coming Sunday afternoon. And Laura Sumner Kuhn and Margaret Stetka Gurgis, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Margaret, you couldn't have a simpler last name, could you?
So my eye doctor used to call me Mrs. Gurgis because my husband's father always used to say, just think gorgeous and put an I in it, Gurgis. And Greg, with your background in languages, if you pretend it's Italian, it isn't bad. Pronounce every consonant and every vowel, and you're there.
Well, I'll try to do better as the interview rolls on. So I'm really excited for us to be able to talk about this concert coming up on Sunday afternoon. I did touch on the sad matter of the passing of George Baumgart earlier this year. I think it was back on the 1st of February. Laura, he was a good friend of yours, and of course this venture of starting this group was something that you did together. So I want to give you just a couple of minutes to talk about George Baumgart and what he meant to you and the community and what this group represented for him.
Thanks, Greg. You know, George was an exceptional person, an exceptional musician. Many of us who are in spirit have been singing or playing or in ministry with George for 30, 40 years. The heart of Spirit of Racine Music Makers was formed out of the choir of Sacred Heart Church in Racine, which is where the concert will be this Sunday. George and Mary, his wife, and I were lamenting the fact that the choir and the instrumentalists couldn't get together during COVID, during 2020. And so it was in the summer of 2020, we were sitting on their patio in the backyard, and I said, you know, there are groups that do secular and sacred music without having a church to sing in. Why don't we do that? And then we can do whatever music that we'd like. And the three of us really thought about it. We thought about how we would want to form it. And we were very much part of a yearning to have social justice in the world and peace. And we thought if we dedicated ourselves to that mission, that would be a good thing. George and I had attended St. Francis Seminary together in lay ministry. We were both Catholic at the time, and we had both gotten a master's in pastoral studies. And so we thought this was a way to kind of combine our love for music and spiritual life. And George was just exceptional. And so he jumped on that right away. And our first Christmas concert actually was 5 years ago. And we did it all by recording in our phones. Mm-hmm. All of our parts, and then George mixed it all, and we made a YouTube video. So we've come a long way from that. And from there, you know, everyone who had performed with him and had been in the church choir followed him. So we have handbells, and we have vocalists, and we have instrumentalists. And every year, there are roughly 50 people. Ironically, as you mentioned, Greg, it was February 1st when George passed away from complications of COVID. And at the time, of course, we were all devastated, and yet we knew that we really wanted to keep this ministry and mission alive. Our first look around said, oh my goodness, we have so many talented people in this group and in this community, and people that we know that have sung or played with us that we could ask to join us, because we knew that they had a heart for the mission. And so we came upon Margie, and we are so profoundly grateful that she said yes. She's dynamic, she's fun. She's just an exceptional vocalist and musician, and she has brought us to a new and different level in a very, very gentle way, I might say, that everyone has really embraced. So we're so glad to have her with us. I want to, before we move to Margie, I just want to mention one other thing. In the passing of George, who was a graduate of UW-Parkside, he was a graduate of the music education program at Parkside, we created the George F. Baumgart Memorial Music Scholarship. And it's at the UW-Parkside Foundation. And this year we have our very first scholarship recipient. She is a vocal student in the music department and music education at Parkside, and we're really grateful for that. So we're trying to foster kind of the spirit that George brought into volunteering in the community and making music for joy.
Very nicely put. We're speaking today in this portion of the morning show with Laura Sumner Kuhn, who is president of the board of directors of the Spirit of Racine Music Makers. And they have a concert coming up this Sunday afternoon, December 8th, 2 o'clock at Sacred Heart Church. And special guests as part of that concert will be the Kiwanis Youth Symphony. And we have also with us Margaret Stetka Jurgis. It's not as easy as you say, Margaret, but that's the last I'll disagree with you about. But at any rate, I want to make sure that we give you a chance to talk not only about growing up right here in Racine, but as the daughter of two musicians and someone who went on to quite a lengthy and substantial career in music education, you have done quite a lot, and I know it serves you well in this new role as artistic director of the group. Tell our listeners more about your own musical journey.
Oh, my goodness. So when I was 4 years old, at the bottom of the stairs at my grandparents' house close to St. Lucie's, I actually sang Old Tannenbaum in German to my grandfather. And if somebody said to me, oh, how did you know that you wanted to be in music? That was it. It's kind of a strange thing to be able to remember something that when you were that young. Interestingly, after there really wasn't a music program at Sacred Heart Church at the time. I did 8 years of school at Sacred Heart, now John Paul II Academy. But my mother was a piano teacher. She taught piano in Racine for 60 years. She was very well known. People remember my mother today before they remember me, interestingly enough. And I'm proud to say that Ethel Stetka was so involved in music in this community. My mother and father actually met when they were at then called Holy Name Church. My mother was playing for the choir, and my dad was singing in the choir. My dad had a beautiful tenor voice, and he sang over at Sacred Heart in all of their choirs over the years, in their funeral choirs. My mother played for those choirs. We, any of us that were taking piano lessons, which we all did, of course, we basically played organ at the church for the church services during the week, which was terrifying, thank you. I don't like playing in front of people. Singing I can do in front of people all day long, but playing the piano puts me into a place of extreme terror. Interestingly about that is that one of my undergraduates was in piano performance, because I said, I can do this. I'm going to find a way to make this happen. So yes, I went through the public, after Sacred Heart, public schools,
say Maria and West Side Story when I was 15 years old, and I think about that and I'm like, are you crazy? But people remember me from that too. I'm like, wait a minute, I've done a lot since then. Majored in music at UW-Whitewater, piano performance, voice performance, music ed, graduated and taught in Kenosha, Wisconsin, taught in Tomah, Wisconsin, taught in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, finished a master's degree in music at UW-Madison. That was voice for performance, where I studied with, as you know, Alona Kombrink. And then ended up in Cincinnati, staying with the opera company down there while teaching music at Cincinnati Country Day School. Interestingly enough, found myself in a technology career, and if somebody would have said that was going to happen, I would have said, yeah, you're nuts. But then ended up following a tech career path. It started out as survival jobs while I was able to do music and performing down in Florida, another long story, and lived all over the country and ended up returning into the Southeast Wisconsin area back, I think it was 1998 or something like that, to help take care of my family. And we ended up moving back into Racine. If somebody would have told me I was moving back into Racine when I left Racine at 18, I was, yeah, that's not going to happen either. But it did. It was a really good move. And now we've been here, my husband and I have been here for 18 years, and found my way back into my relationship with George. I actually have known him since I was 15, because he was the music director over at Sacred Heart, and of course, that was my parish. And when my mother was passing away, I literally was trying to find somebody to give her last rite, and the only church that I could find with an available priest was Sacred Heart. Father Ricardo came over, didn't know us, didn't know my mom, showed up at my sister's house where my mother was at the time. And I was really impressed with that. And I said, I need to pay that forward, and started singing again at Sacred Heart. So that's how that started. Life unfolds in very interesting ways, doesn't it?
It really does. And it's not always by our script. Yes. Very good.
And then how many years later, I end up moving into this role again. If somebody would have said this is going to happen in your life, I'd have said, yes, not going to happen. But never say never, right?
Exactly. We just have a couple of minutes for this particular question, but Laura mentioned something about how she sees you having maybe brought this group, the Spirit of Racine Music Makers, to another level. I suspect perhaps maybe elevating it in some respects. What have you really sought to do with this with the group in terms of musically what they are able to do?
Well, first of all, this group is a very earnest group of people. As somebody who has designed and delivered training classes to adults as part of my technology career, most of the time when presenting new information, especially adults, they get this whole wall. I don't want to do something differently. This group is not that way. As a matter of fact, they're the polar opposite of that. So bringing what I know about singing and music to this has, it's in a different way. I'm very, very hands-on and very, very physical. I'm very, very much, I don't consider them warm-ups. I call it the 5-minute voice lesson, right? And giving a suggestion to this group, I was saying this in rehearsal a couple weeks ago, you give a suggestion and they immediately take it and apply it in all of these different areas. There's such eagerness and such earnestness about learning. I find that remarkable. So my approach is different. I feel like I'm a teacher, not a director. And that, I think, is probably the difference. I'm learning at the same time, because I told you I spent a career in technology and find myself back in music. So dusting off all of those directing and teaching skills after how many years, I'm going to be honest, I was terrified to do it. But I have learned so much more about me, about what's available, gratified to know that there's still rocks up there in the old head that remember how to do this. And as they give, I give. And so, you know this, Greg, you're a teacher. So you get through this wonderful circular exchange of energy. I'm open to it. They're open to it. And if that means that I've made a difference, that makes me very happy. Thank you for that, Laura. That makes me happy.
And the,
I think the other thing is that we're a group that enjoys humor. And so there's no shortage of that during rehearsals, because Margie has us marching and singing and loosely waving our hands and talking about going to Dairy Queen in all different pitches. It's been fun.
Let me just give you a minute or so. Literally, that's about all we have left to talk about a couple of highlights from Sunday afternoon's concert that people should look forward to.
I would mention we have this delightful piece called Ugly Christmas Sweater. And so we're encouraging people to come to the audience wearing an ugly Christmas sweater. And we'll have a little ugly Christmas sweater contest. So that's kind of a fun little note. Margie, you take it away from here.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say the ugly Christmas sweater. Everybody wear ugly Christmas sweaters. Have fun with it. We're having fun with it.
And I think the other thing is that we are featuring the Kiwanis Youth Symphony for the second time, and we love to do that. So it is very much a communal organization. We want to support the community and look for people to join us at any time.
Yes. Yes.
And if people want to attend Sunday afternoon's concert, do they simply show up at Sacred Heart Church? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, simply show up. The concert's at 2 o'clock at Sacred Heart in Racine. It's on Northwestern Avenue. The concert is free. We will invite people to consider giving us a free will offering, and we use that to support our music, but also to spread around the community as well.
Wonderful. The Spirit of Racine Music Makers in concert this Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock at Sacred Heart Church. That's at 2201 Northwestern Avenue. It's a beautiful place for making music, a beautiful setting, and as Laura just said, the Kiwanis Youth Symphony will also be on hand as part of this concert. Laura Sumner Kuhn is president of the board. Margaret Stetka Gurgis is the artistic director of the Spirit of Racine Music Makers. I got it correct at the last little bit here. So great to speak with both of you. Best wishes to you and all of your musicians for Sunday afternoon's concert.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, in a departure from our published schedule, we're going to be sharing an interview I recorded with Curzio Caravatti, talking about his nonprofit, which is known as Kufi Farm, Kenosha Urban Farm Institute. It is a research farm, and they are trying to explore new and better means of growing crops and of feeding the population of the world in more sustainable fashion. So that is tomorrow on The Morning Show. On Thursday, we will be previewing this coming weekend's Christmas Festival at Carthage College. And this year is being billed as the 150th anniversary of the Christmas Festival at Carthage. It was 150 years ago this month that the first Christmas concert of any kind took place at Carthage College, back on the old campus in Carthage, Illinois. And it has grown, of course, over the years to now being one of the most spectacular events in southeastern Wisconsin during the holidays. We'll be speaking with Matthew Hoagland and Maggie Burke, who are two of the primary coordinators for the festival. And on Friday, we will preview for you this weekend's performances of Handel's Messiah at the University of Wisconsin Parkside with Dr. James Kinchin, who will be conducting the performances, and Monty Bedford. These performances are dedicated to the memory of his mother, Frances Bedford, longtime music faculty member at Parkside, and the beautiful concert hall there is named for her. These performances will be in her memory. We'll talk to both of them on Friday. Today is going to, we'll see skies eventually become partly sunny. We have a high today of just 33 degrees. The overnight low is 25 degrees, winds gusting to 35 miles per hour. And a cloudy, windy, gusty day tomorrow with snow showers possible, a high of 38 degrees. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine, Elkhorn.